Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. This is an off-the-shelf edition of The Book Show in partnership with Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, and recorded before a live audience. Walter Mosley's award-winning, critically adored body of work has sold millions of copies all over the world. Though he was perhaps best known for his mysteries featuring the character E.Z. Rollins, over the course of his long and prolific career, he's also written a handful of literary novels that wrestle with questions political and philosophical. His latest is such a novel, the result of nearly 20 years of incubation. It is a convention-defying novel of ideas about the sexual and intellectual coming of age of an unusual man who goes by the name Woman. The new book is John Woman. It is a great pleasure to welcome Walter Mosley to this week's Book Show. Welcome. It's very nice to have you here.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here. In Vermont, you know, I used to live here in Vermont for 7 years.
As I mentioned in the introduction, nearly 20 years, 15 to 20 years that you've been working on this. So how, give us a sense of what that is like, of how this book has been in that incubation process.
Well, what you do is, what I did was I kept thinking that all of us want to know what happened. I mean, that's always the case. But the truth is that history happens in the future. That's also always the case because history is always being reinterpreted, re-understood. You know, Richard III is all of a sudden a hero now after, you know, 6 centuries. It was an amazing thing. And you know, and I had studied this, all this stuff, you know, in graduate school and before here in Vermont at Goddard College. And it's so hard to put that together, to understand how history controls us, but we... And it's a real thing, but we can't completely understand it. You know, so it was that kind of delicate balance I was trying to reach.
What various stages, was it the thinking about it that has taken all the time, or have you been actively writing it all that time?
Well, you know, I wrote the beginning, which is before the beginning, pretty quickly, way back in the beginning, because it's John, when his name is Cornelius Jones, with his parents. And how that life was. And that was kind of easy for me. But how that led to a professor at a university who you're going to be interested in, I mean, you understand? I mean, you can write about that, and it could be really true and really boring, you know? You remember going to those dinners, and somebody's telling you that story, and you go, uh-huh, uh-huh. I think I'm having a heart attack. Could you take me to the hospital, please? You know, so like the problem was is to write an interesting story that would hold the ideas, and I've been writing on that, you know, forever. You know, really honestly, I just.
And then at what point, when it came closer to publication, that you said, okay, I'm going to focus on this.
Well, yeah, at one point I decided to. This is an interesting thing. This book that I've written, you know, John Woman, I finished it, and I sent it to about 17 publishers, and they all rejected it. They all rejected it. And I didn't ask for a lot of money, you know, because, you know, I mean, and really, being who I am, I mean, you know, if you don't ask for much money, they can probably make it back. But the problem was that, you know, they had problems. I have suspicions about what the problems were, but I got the strangest rejections. You know, my longest-term editor wrote a two-word rejection, said too intellectual. That's it. You know, that coyote was too smart. And I had one woman say, I can't publish the book as it is, but if you would like to come in and have me explain to you how you could write it. And I'm like, whoa. I'm so glad we weren't face-to-face, you know. But it was a lot of rejections. And every time I got rejected, I reread the whole book. I consider if you reread a manuscript, that's like a draft. You know, and I didn't make changes or anything, you know. Finally, you know, Morgan Intrigan, who had actually studied all of this stuff at Stanford from Grove Atlantic, said, Walter, you know, I studied this stuff, but I actually understand it when you write about it, so I'm going to publish this book. It was funny. Not so funny, really. But
yeah. I would think that would be discouraging.
Yeah. Kept on saying, oh, my God, it's a bad book. You know, I guess, you know, number 50, whatever, 57, it's can be bad. It's not a prime number or anything, but it could be bad. You know? You know, what I think it is that, you know, I'm talking about, you know, Nietzsche's notion of the finite universe. Not a lot, but I mentioned things like that. Maybe about like 40 or 50 things like that through the book. And I'm pretty sure the people reading it hadn't studied that stuff, so they didn't understand it. And because they understood me as a gritty, urban, you know, kind of writer of E.C. Rollins, they said, well, he probably doesn't understand either, so we'll publish this book and everybody will, you know, say we're stupid. I honestly think that if I was Cornel West, it would have been okay, you know.
Really?
Yeah, well, you know, he was at Harvard and Princeton, so like they said, well, you know, he must be smart.
Yeah, but you're Walter Mosley.
But I'm urban gritty. That's really, honestly, even in this book, we sent this book out to a whole lot of people. So much fun. We sent this book to this one reviewer who I won't name and sent it to him and sent him notes. And it was like 10 or 12 times gotten in touch with him. Finally, my publicist called a guy and he said, well, what about the Mosley book? And he said, well, you know, I don't do mysteries. Now, he'd been sent the book. He'd been sent the write-up on the book. He'd been explained what the book was. But still, when you see Walter Mosley, well, it's like gritty urban mystery. And so,
right.
And you stop. You know, it's America. America's capitalism. Capitalism is a production line. Production line is specialization. If you've put the left front tire in the Pinto, that's what you do. Say, so, well, you know, he put in the automatic transmission. No. Mosley does. He does the left front tire. Does it pretty good.
But does that make you resent the left front tire?
Listen, the whole production line, you know, I the whole production line is just it's amazing, you know, that how much our lives are defined. And a lot of this book is about that, how much our right. lives are defined by the way in which we work.
It would seem to me, and just going back to what I was asking there, it would seem to me then that would almost make you not, and not to say that you're vengeful in this way, but that you wouldn't want to write another E.C. Rollins just to say, well, there you go.
Well, you know, I like writing E.C. Rollins. Listen, when I start, yeah, because I'm writing one right now, you know, and it's so much fun, you know, like, because, you know, E.C. has this big history and Los Angeles has this history. And my commitment to E.C. Rollins is this. If you're not in the literature, you become an orphan of history. And I know all these black people who moved to Los Angeles starting in the 40s, who made Los Angeles, who made American music, who made everything that we are, and they're completely unknown. And so, and able to write a series of books to talk about that is a commitment, you know. And I, you know, just because somebody's a fool, I'm not going to not meet up to my commitments, you know.
Right.
You know, and even in this book, I would just, you know, I would have published it, but you know, one way or another, but. But, you know, I mean, it's good to be published with Grove. I mean, that's great. But the idea is that you can't be, you know, flummoxed by idiocy, you know.
Well, no. I mean, I'm continually flummoxed by idiocy, but I don't know. I mean, you can be,
but then you have to recover. You recover.
Right.
Say, I was flummoxed, but now I'm going to, you know, because it's, you know, they're idiots, you know. Like, I mean, really, they're people who are foolish, they, you know, and you don't understand and that you know, what's going on. It's like when you know, a lot of times in publishing, if you're an agent and you say, I got this new book and it's this great thing and something like that, a lot of times an editor will say, well, could I see a picture of the writer? Not really. I'll let you just think of what that means, right? You know, no ugly third children can need apply.
Wow.
Could I see a photograph? Huh.
With that said, I mean, has it always been a fight for you?
Well, you know, it's been difficult, and you know, in the beginning, you know, the first book I wrote was a book called Gone Fishing, which I finally published with Paul Coates at Black Classic
yes.
Press. I sent that book out, and people, everybody rejected it.
What year is this?
88, 89, one of
okay.
those two. And everybody rejected it. It's a book that, anyway. And I finally understood what it was. They say, it's wonderfully written. We love the characters. It's a real sense of place, but it's not commercial. And what they meant was, is that at that time, what they thought, white people don't read about black people, black women don't like black men, and black men don't read. So who gonna buy your book? You know, none of that was true, but it's true if you say it's true and you control the market. And so that was a, you know, that was a big. I wrote Devil in Blue Dress, and a lot of people said, "Oh, that's interesting, a black detective." And you know, and one publisher said to me, he said, "You know, there already is a black detective." You know, Garanthony Haywood had already, you know, a year or two before I'd written written a black detective, and you know, and of course Chester Hines, but and then and I said, "Well, there's a whole lot of white detectives," and he said, "I don't know what you mean. You can't be flummoxed by idiocy. I mean, really, honestly, so you just kind of look at him and say, wow, you know, you can't say you're stupid either. You just have to, you know, I can say it now, but I couldn't say it then."
So getting to the point where you can say it now,
mm-hmm.
what was the step for you that brought you the allowance to, in some ways, do what you want?
Well, you know, this is an interesting thing, you know, because, again, back to the production line and the specialization.
Right.
I go to a publisher and I say, I've written this book. Maybe it's a book of science fiction. Maybe it's a book about the blues. Maybe it's a book about, you know, a porn star who's decided to quit the industry. And they say, okay, we'll give you a two-book contract, this and then an Easy Rollins. And I say, fine, okay. And so I write that book and I write these Rollins because, you know, I like to write these Rollins. And then I go to another publisher, and I say, well, I got this other book. You know, this one's about the blues. I said, great, this and an Easy Rollins. I said, okay, sure. Yeah, and I've been doing that, you know, for nearly 30 years. I mean, it's a kind of amazing thing, you know. I feel really kind of at home at Grove Atlantic. And I just gave them, you know, a book. I just wrote a book called Meditations on the Structure of Revelation. It's my second book about how you write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was shocked. You know, Morgan called me up and said, yeah, let's do it, you know. And, you know, and that's after writing John Woman, you know, which is another. And he hasn't talked about Easy Rollins yet. I mean, I don't think he cares, and I think we're more on the same, you know.
But they're also known as a literary publisher.
Yeah, well, you know, and I'm a literary writer, even though, you know, it's hard to explain that to some people. So, but you write mysteries, and you feel like saying, yeah, but, you know, but you aren't getting slapped across the face right now, so what do you think? You know, I mean, it's like, you say, are you saying that Dashiell Hammett wasn't a literary writer? You know, and it's like, and they're going, well, but, you know, that's different, you know, he's dead, you know, so, you know, it's like, it's a problematic thing that, you know, you're saying, well, if you write in a genre by definition cannot be literary.
Hmm.
You know, and you kind of go, really, are you kidding? There's a science fiction writer named Rogers, the last name. I still don't know a person who writes better sentences. I read those sentences, I go, oh my god, he's as good as Ross McDonald. You know, I mean, really, I mean, you know, and really, you know, because there's one, you know, genre and another, but, you know, but the thing is that it's not the genre. It's the mind. It's like people say, well, you only really get stuff out of reading good books. No, reading is what makes you a better mind. It doesn't matter what you're reading.
Hmm.
You know, you have to, when you're reading stuff, if it's bad stuff, you probably start reading better stuff. But it doesn't even matter because reading, you know, does things to your mind that nothing else does. You know, that other than, you know, love and working with someone.
The name of the new novel is John Woman, and Walter Mosley is our guest on this week's book show. So the characters in this book, I mean, let's take John, for example, also Cornelius, also Cece. This idea of the different names, what did you want to look at with that to understand, of have those different social circles, different places, different ideas of who this person is?
It's funny because I think that he's a character who represents his profession, which is unusual. And his profession is, as he defines himself, a deconstructionist historian. That history itself has to be deconstructed in order to be understood as far as you can understand it. And he, because he's committed a murder at the age of 16, has had to deconstruct himself for very practical reasons so he doesn't get caught and put in prison. Through that deconstruction, he becomes John Woman. He becomes a professor of deconstructionist history. This comes from his father, who's an ex-sharecropper autodidact, who has John read to him from really dense tomes every night from a very early age. He's learned all of this stuff that his father's learned, and his father's learned a very important lesson. He said, I just want to say to you and anybody on the radio, I personally don't believe in the existence of white people. I don't even understand the term. When someone says I'm a white person, I say, so you from white land? You speak white? It's such a nutty thing, you know, but it's a concept. So here's a fictitious concept of white people, and white people, when understanding this history, don't count the history of white men, most women, most people of color, anybody who doesn't, you know, is not from this country, most people who are non-Christians. So, but if you don't understand the history of the people who you built your world with, then you've asphyxiated your own history. And that's what he's kind of doing. He's doing it with his names, but he's also doing it with how he teaches and how he lives. And because he knows that he can't control history, he knows that history is going to catch up to him.
That idea of history catching up to him, because there are obviously not the only character to have these different identities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important because there's these different circles. There's these different worlds, if you will.
Yeah, and that's kind of what's one, and we all live it. I mean, the thing that's so interesting is we all live through that. We all live through identities. You know, who we are here, who
right.
we are there, who we think of ourselves. I have a little goddaughter. You know, Stacey Ann Chen's daughter. You know, Zuri. You know, Zuri calls me up and she goes, "Uncle Walter." And she's the only person in the world. I'm an only child. The child of two people who are only children. But I have this kid who calls me Uncle Walter, and I am Uncle Walter. You know, only there. But, you know, and that's that kind of wonderful moment, you know, because it's important and it's passionate.
I want to talk about the ending, because you've said that you like it, but some people don't. And I'm curious as to what we can talk about this generally and then specifically, obviously, without giving it away. But of what for you as a writer is a satisfying ending?
An ending that somehow encapsulates the story or the novel or the poem or whatever went before it. You know, there's that that wonderful poem. What's his name? His last name is Wright. What's his first name? James Wright. And is that there's a whole poem, all these things are happening, you know, very normal, everyday pedestrian things, cowbells and birds flying and butterflies being blown on. And then at the very end, the very last line is, "I have wasted my life." And it's so perfect. It's like, and you don't expect it. It's like everything is like so beautiful and wonderful and this and that, you know, and he's lying in a hammock, you know. But, yeah, when you look at the world, I've wasted my life. Here I am. You know, you wanted that. And John has brought himself to a place that's untenable, but it's perfect for him. So the ending is, how could he get out of that? And the ending, I think, answers that in an oblique way.
Mm. Do you generally like to do that, of have a more oblique ending as opposed to something that is, I will say in a commercial term, satisfying?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I want to be like in a commercial term satisfying, but I think that like a poem, you can't end every poem with "I have wasted my life," you know, otherwise the poems start to become dumb, you know, but like.
And
like,
depressing as hell.
Yeah, right. That's true. I've really used my life well. That would be a hard ending to come up with, but it depends on what the story is. The story should bring you to an ending, you know. And I have different kinds of characters when I write. Like, for instance, if I'm writing about Fearless Jones, those are comedies, and so like at the end, everybody's happy. If I'm writing Easy Rollins, those are tragedies, and you know, if you live, you know that's worse than if you had died in an Easy Rollins. And this is just true because that's his nature. But it changes from book to book and from character to character.
Let us just talk for a moment about Easy Rollins. Of what do you think there is about that character that struck a chord with people, that allowed people to come to your work?
Hmm. Well, I think that there are a few different kinds of people who come to East Rollins. They're mystery people, and it follows the genre pretty well. There are black people in America, like black men in America. They weren't that wrong about black men not reading fiction, because we black men are so misrepresented in fiction and have been so much that you read a character and it doesn't look like you, it doesn't sound like you, it doesn't do things that you're doing. And Easy and the people he knows reflect a lot of, you know, reality in black life, in language, but also in the way people think and act and have to think and act. You know, and which is different than another world. Not that I believe in the existence of black people either. It's just that it was made up by the so-called white people because so they could be slaves. But in order to do that, you know, I think that made things happen. And then I think there's a whole other set of readers who started reading it and said, "Wow, this guy thinks just the way I do." You know, but I'm not from where he is. And I didn't. You know, it's like talking to little old, 90-year-old white lady saying, "I like that mouse." You know, it's like because she wants to know that mouse. You know, it's like because he's interesting. You know, whereas many people in life are not so interesting. And so I think that that's what you do usually with fiction, especially that kind of literary genre stuff. You know, because you don't have it's not like. You're not going to sell, Patterson or something like that. But it's you're going to bring something to people that allows you to say like you're kind of looking into a world, you know.
Yeah. This touches on what you were saying earlier about the enjoyment that you have in writing that series, and I would think that as compared to a book like this, that's very defined. And this is the study of this character, that with Easy Rollins, it's something that you are sustaining over a long period of time, and it must be fascinating to see the evolution of that character.
Well, it's a lot of fun, you know. You come in, you start writing about Easy Rollins, in this new one, he's realized that he can't just live in a house, on a street in Los Angeles, because he has this adopted daughter that he's trying to raise, and he needs to find a place where he can live where other people can't get at him. And figuring that out was so much fun. And it allows you to look at L.A. in a different kind of way. And so those kinds of problems, and also the issues of race. There's a guy comes up to him who has 69, but he has PTSD, but he doesn't know he has PTSD because they didn't have that then. And so he's a vet though. And Easy knows he shouldn't take the case. He knows it. He says, "I'm not going to make any money. I'm going to get in trouble. Somebody's going to get hurt. Solving this case is going to make it worse for him if I don't solve it." But at some point, he realizes that race is an interesting thing. There are different kinds of races. He's a man. He's African American. He's a reader, but he's also a veteran. And his experience as a veteran put him on exactly the same line as this young white guy. And he ends up having to take the case. And I never knew that about Easy until I started writing this book, I said, "Wow, that's true. He has to represent this guy because he and this guy share a history. It's a long history. It goes all the way back to the Assyrians and before that, right? Men in war." And so, I like it.
When you look at I could ask this to you about any of these books, but are they reflective of what you were going through at the time, of what we as a culture are going through at the time?
I think John Woolman would work at any time because history is always an issue. All the way back. There are other things. Like when I was writing A Red Death, the second Easy Rollins novel, I had this dentist. Boy, I hate this dentist because this dentist, you get those dentists, they want to save your teeth. He said, "Well, we're going to save this tooth." I said, "Man, but it hurts." He said, "Yeah, I know, but hopefully the pain is going to go away, And so I'm like walking around, and my jaw hurts so bad. It hurts so bad that I had to get Easy hit in the face, and his tooth broken, and he's in pain. So I could continue writing because if Easy had to feel the pain I was feeling, or I couldn't write about him anymore, And as the pain went away, he went to Jackson Blue, he got some morphine, and then things were okay.
I think you answered my question.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
The name of the new novel is John Woman. It is published by Grove Atlantic. Walter Mosley, a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. This has been great.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or wamc.org. This off-the-shelf edition was recorded in Manchester Center, Vermont, in partnership with Northshire Bookstore, northshire.com. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.